Welcome to the Up the Cream podcast 2022 episode 6. I'm Dan Tomlinson and I'm joined as always by Rich Harrison, aka Pommy Rich. How are you doing, pal?
Yeah, not bad. Not bad.
Good stuff. Obviously, there's a game to talk about this week. There's also a game upcoming this week to talk about as well. There's plenty of talking points from that. But after the news that broke last week, just after we finished recording this podcast, there's only one place to start, and that is with Johnny Whiteley, MBE. Johnny was a legend of Hull FC, a two-time championship winner, two-time Rugby League World Cup winner, part of a famous 50s team that, was a force throughout the decade. Had another championship final to that, three Yorkshire Cup finals, two Wembley appearances. They were moulded together by Roy Francis, who, Rugby League's first ever black coach, who was way ahead of his time. And Johnny was the front man of that. It was a, a hell of a team with a boisterous pack and a, a good, talented back line. And I'd say Hull, one of the best teams in the country during that era. They were phenomenal at times. And to hear stories about, how Johnny, it was an obsession to play for Hull. It's all he ever wanted to do. And when he says that, the Boulevard, it was a place where literally everybody feared coming. And how Roy Francis, how he developed that, that arrogance about them to be born out winners and to have that confidence in them and that those relationships throughout the team, which I think was, which was so massive, and how they stayed friends, together post-retirement for decades. And it, all the stories are absolutely phenomenal. And, Johnny Whiteley is a name that is absolutely synonymous with Hull FC. He was an incredible player, an incredible person, and had an absolutely incredible career. 418 Hull FC appearances, 156 tries, 12 appearances for Yorkshire, 15 for Great Britain, 1 for England, GB Ashes winning coach, Hull FC Yorkshire Cup winning coach, Hull FC captain as well, and rightly judged by many to be the greatest player to ever adorn the black and white irregular hoops.
A very sad day for Rugby League, a sad day for Hull, and a sad day for the city of Hull, and a sad day for everyone that knew him, obviously. And I think, the tributes and stuff have been brilliant. I thought what Hull did before the match on Saturday was lovely and hit the right note absolutely perfectly. And I've got to say, good on Channel 4 for showing that in full, because that wouldn't have been in their original plans, but they showed that in full, and they seem to have grasped the kind of concept around the community that is Rugby League, which was really good to see. What can you say about the guy? I think I wrote in my blog for Up the Cream last week, that we're very much reliant on fathers and grandfathers and great-grandfathers to tell us what he was like as a player, because there's very little surviving footage. But what you can always talk to is the way that he treated people long after he retired, and the way that he was held in esteem for the guy that he was, for the man that he was. Never mind the player that he was or the coach that he was, but just the guiding light and the kind of talisman that he was for the club can never be understated. And as a club man, only ever played for us and England and Great Britain. Obviously coached Rovers, coached us, coached Great Britain, coached England. But black and white through and through, and an absolute legend.
Yeah, he is the greatest ever. There is no doubt about that. Yeah. And yeah. Johnny Whiteley, the player, was absolutely phenomenal. And yes, there is limited footage. It was nice to see Hull FC actually put what they could out there on social media last week for people like me and yourself, because we're nowhere near old enough to obviously see that live. And interesting, I've got a few Up the Cream subscribers who are that age, who are mid-80s, knocking around the age of 90, and a couple of them rang me last week, which was really nice just to share those memories and just talk to me about the player he was, because that's something obviously we haven't seen for ourselves. And but what fascinates me, obviously meeting Johnny Whiteley and knowing him a little bit, was the person he was post-retirement. And we all hear the stories about obviously what he did in the community game, and this started from a 9-year-old boy. You can imagine it growing up on Ezel Road. World War II breaks out, the whole blitz, you've got planes dropping bombs, and one of them actually hits your home. I mean, how terrifying must that be? You're playing in the street with your mates, you've got to run to your air raid shelter, take cover, or you'll die. It's as simple as that. And those stories are incredible. And, you know, playing paper balls with his mates in the street and teaching themselves how to play rugby league and using cabs as touchlines and street lampposts as goalposts and taking everyone under his wing and the leadership qualities he showed. Then, obviously, his uncle and his dad both went into the war, and it was his uncle's gym that he took people into, and he started training people and coaching people. And he became a hero as a 9-year-old boy going on 10. And that carried on all the way through his life. You know, he helped form West Hull, who was a big part in Eureka Club as well. And he, you know, ran gyms all free of charge as well.
A born leader. Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, that's incredible, isn't it, when you think that the selflessness to actually do that and do it for so many decades and not to charge a penny for doing it and just see it as a privilege because he's helping young people, maybe, you know, obviously with sport, but also with health as well, because we forget that exercise is huge to mental health. And he was a big advocate for that as well, and just helped thousands of people throughout his life. It's incredible, really.
And would drop anything, would drop plans, would drop anything for the club. And if someone asked him to go and talk to a junior club, if someone asked him to address a bunch of players or to help out, he was there, you know. And he was one of those people that, you know, you'd go to an A-team match in the, you know, when I was going to A-team matches in the 80s and 90s, and he'd be there, and he'd be wandering around, and he'd be holding court in his little corner. And, you know, you'd go to, if you ever kind of happened upon going to training or something like that, he was around. You know, for every player who's played for Hull since he retired has got a Johnny Whiteley story. They never played with him. So most of them, especially in the last 20 years, wouldn't have even seen footage of him playing. Aussies that played for the club. You know, I've seen some lovely tributes this week from Aussies that played and are now back over here saying, you know, what a sad loss it is to the game, because, you know, they knew that if they ever needed anything, you know, they ever wanted clarification on anything about the history of the club, there's only one bloke they'd ever go to, you know, because he knew everything and he was the club. A terrible loss. And, you know, I mean, nothing ever goes forever, but I think we all kind of thought that Johnny would.
Yeah, a couple of mates, we pretty much said that. You know, it took us, it hit every Hull FC fan hard, I think, like that news last week. Anyone with a connection to Hull FC would have felt that and would have been touched by it and been moved by that and been hurt by it. And this is just, you know, as I say, as a supporter base that aren't close friends, aren't close family, that don't know him really well as others do, but that's who Johnny Whiteley was. He had that impact on you as a supporter. And the famous quote that you used last year when we always used to talk about Johnny Whiteley was, Johnny Whiteley goes beyond being a legend of the club. He is the club, and he always will be. A phenomenal player, phenomenal person. And yeah, I am so, so proud of the club for the way they handled it. All the way throughout the week, though, on social media, on the website, it was all outstanding. It really was. You know, with the tributes. Yeah.
They've done a great job.
Yeah, absolutely. It was tear-jerking on Saturday, those tributes, when the video came out on the big screen. The whole thing, the floral tributes. Lizzie Jones, she can sing, can't she? Yeah, it was beautiful.
Yeah.
It really was. Tony Cotson, I thought his patches that he read out
was wonderful.
Yeah, it was all just perfectly delivered, wasn't it? And touching, emotional, but that's something we seem to get right as a club, you know. We can whinge about what, you know, what we see with contracts and where we are right now and players and everything else. But when something like this happens, we get it right. We do. We absolutely nail it, because the club, I think, understand how passionate the supporters are and how much Hull FC means to everyone. And obviously, Hull FC meant absolutely everything to Johnny Whiteley. That was his life. He absolutely idolised the black and whites, and nobody wore the black and white more prouder than Johnny Whiteley. And we had to do him justice. And I think the club absolutely did there. I think, as I say, they absolutely nailed it.
Yeah, I can't disagree with that. The only thing I would say was that I wish the players were stood on a freezing cold pitch during a lot of it. And it'd be nice. They could have done a lot of that with the players still in the sheds and warm, rather than, you know, standing out on a blustery MKM stadium about to snow for a good 10-15 minutes, cooling down and not, you know, not staying warm, because that's how you get bad injuries.
Yeah, I get
that.
Helped. Yeah.
Not that it helped. That's me nitpicking it.
Yeah, I get what you mean, but I suppose if you're Danny Elton, you are, you know, the modern day equivalent, if you like, your Hull SC throwing through. You want to see that. You want to be a part of that. And it was interesting. Luke Gale's obviously done Danny a service there, because he let Danny present the floral tribute on the pitch.
Yeah.
And I think that was a nice touch from Gale to actually do that and allow him to do that. But yeah, yeah, I'm just glad that everyone, like say, has the personal memories to cling on to with Johnny Whiteley. And you know, up the cream, the name Up the Cream. And this is something I did mention in the current issue, and I must thank everyone who's bought that over the weekend. It really appreciated. And where I'm going with this, yeah, the Up the Cream name is all centred around that era where the black and white colours ran in the wash, and the dairy factory was on its, you know, in its prime and Ezel Road, and it's all about that era. And the whole thing about Up the Cream is literally it, for 7 years now, it's red for those that remember Gentleman John, Broughton Rangers, and the smell of stale piss in the threepenny stand. So it's all centred on a story that Pete Allen told me, and it stuck with me, and I thought, yeah, I like that, because it's old school, and you know, I've got an obsession with nostalgia, I must admit. Hull FC's history fascinates me, it always has done, it always will do, and Johnny Whiteley's story's always fascinated me, and as I said, I just love the fact that everyone has their own personal connections to Johnny Whiteley. Another one of my men I mentioned was the whole boys club thing, because I played full boys club 2007 to 2008 season, where I was with Hull Isberg, and we went under the whole boys club brand under Jim Brown, when it was based in a building where the bonus arena now stands. Obviously, it's sad now that building's been knocked down, because it was, you know, it was very historic and synonymous with Hull Boys Club. But yeah, the gym and that little sports hall that was like a weird two right angle sides, and then it was cut off in like a triangle. It was weird. It was a weird place to train in, especially when you're trying to run through your players and play rugby league in it when it's raining outside. But yeah, I just love the fact that, you know, I played for the same amateur team as Johnny Whiteley. I can look back and, you know, if I ever have kids, if I ever have grandkids, I can tell them that. And it's just, you know, little connections and people will be the same. I've seen stories on social media. Oh, yeah, I was lucky enough to be coached by Johnny Whiteley. Oh, yeah, I did this with him, I did that. I think it's absolutely fantastic. Yeah. And that's what I've got to remember him by.
I think most Hull players have got a story, you know, especially my vintage and older. I think everyone's got a Johnny Whiteley story, you know, even if it's just second hand. You know, or someone told you, or you know, you overheard or something. Everyone's got a Johnny Whiteley story, and the loss is immeasurable. It really is. It's going to take a while, I think, because he's just always been there.
Yeah,
you know, and you know, as I'm talking right now, I just heard the news that the Queen's got COVID, and it's a bit similar. You know, I mean, without being facetious. It's like, you know, when something's threatened that's been there all the time, and I'm no royalist, you know, at all. I think we should all be forced to live on council houses in Bransome. But when something's threatened that you've known all of your life, it's an eerie feeling. It's a weird feeling, no matter what your personal thoughts are about that person, you know. And for Johnny not to be there, and for the club, you know, not to be presenting him with a jersey every year like they always have, and for Johnny not to be, you know, kind of presiding over ex-players' functions and not to, his face not to be on the pre-season video next year and all of that. It's a sobering thought, really is.
It is, and I'd say it'll touch everyone, it'll hurt everyone, but so you've got to remember what Johnny Whiteley was with a smile on your face, and cherish your own personal memories with him, and stories that you've heard from, you know, your parents and your grandparents and you know, historians and everyone else. And yeah, we just obviously wait and see now what the club will do as a long term tribute, because they've announced that it will come out in due course. And I've seen things like naming the Mighton Bridge the Johnny Whiteley Bridge to connect the Clive Sullivan Way with the Roger Millwood Way. That is a nice touch. It's like a City
that
United.
Really is. Really
I do like that. It's probably not the time and place, but I don't agree with retiring the 13th yet. Johnny Whiteley wouldn't want that. He would not want that at all. He would want the next 13 coming through. This was a big advocate 100%. Of community, junior, youth rugby league. Johnny would want to see the next one come through and have that aspiration to play a match yet.
I've got to ask, I'm not 100% certain. Did Rovers retire the 6th shirt for Roger Millwood?
They did,
or did they bring it back?
No, they've retired it, yeah, because, yeah.
They have retired it?
Yeah,
right,
Jordan Abdul wears 7, Mickey Lewis wears 20, there's no 6.
Right, Okay. All right. No, I don't agree with it. And I think the reason I don't agree with it is because Johnny wouldn't want that. He would really not want that, I don't think.
No, I
don't agree with that.
No, I don't. It's... come on, we all love Johnny and what he did at the club, absolutely. But the club is bigger than everything. And I always say that it's the club that matters more than anything. And where I'm going with this is, like you say, you want to see the next player come through and absolutely have an obsession, like Johnny did, because that's what it was. It was an absolute obsession to play for LFC. And I want the next kid to have that and say, right, I want that 13 shirt. It's what I'm going to do. Or I'm going to die trying. You know, it's everything I want in life. I want that 13 shirt. And you want to inspire the next kid to come through and want that shirt. And that's what Johnny would want, absolutely. I have no doubt in saying that. It would be nice to, you know, everything else, the bridge renaming, fantastic. Anything else that's come out, you know, maybe a statue or something, a memorial, and anything like that would be absolutely fantastic. Something on Hazel Road, maybe, where he grew up. You know, anything like that would be brilliant. But, yeah, it's... Yeah, obviously it will be a talking point in the foreseeable, but right now it's obviously a time of mourning, and we all obviously are gutted with the news, absolutely gutted, and it was just so emotional on Saturday. It really was. It was probably the most humbling I've ever felt at the MKM circle, whatever you want to call it. Just everyone, it was just stood silent. You couldn't hear anything except the announcer, except Lizzie Jones singing, except, you know, the minute silence and the referee's whistle. It was just, you know, we say well done to the club, you know, well done to obviously the people that were involved in the tributes, but also well done to the supporters too, because they felt that and they were a part of that.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, I'll say it, because I don't think it can be said enough, I thought Channel 4 did an amazing job at covering that.
Yeah.
I really did.
Yeah. Watched it back on all four over here, and the whole presentation of Channel 4 has been absolutely excellent, and it's sort of gutting to think that we're a fifth of the way through their coverage already, two games out of ten done, because it's been a breath of fresh air. It really has. Thought Paul Scunthorpe was excellent. It really was. Some really good comments, and you know, probably thinking it's St Helens legend is Paul, and he's probably thinking, oh, he's just going to be biased towards them, and but they are three.
No, I thought he was pretty good.
Yeah, exactly. He was pretty rigid. And they are three Pete Sudbury champions after all.
Yeah, I did see a couple of keyboard warriors, you know, decide that they were going to have a bit of a go at, oh, how biased is his commentary? And, you know, we got two ex-St Helens players on the blah, 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 blah. Well, no, it wasn't, for a start. It wasn't biased at all. I thought it was very, very well balanced. And of course they were praising St Helens. They were winning 38 points to 6, for Christ's sake. You know, there's only so much you can talk about a team that's getting humbled, you know. You know, I thought Channel 4 did a great job. I mean, I managed to get a dodgy VPN working about 10 minutes before the thing started. So I was very happy to be able to watch it on my laptop, because again, Channel 4 and Fox haven't come to an agreement to show it over here, which is a real shame. But I just thought. I thought it was a really, really professional, really, really polished presentation.
Yeah, absolutely, and I suppose a thanks extends to Channel 4 for you know, paying that respect to Johnny Whiteley, because he's the club's greatest ever player. He's an absolute, you know, legend over here. He's immortal. He'll never ever be forgotten, and that legacy will continue forever. And just for them to appreciate that, to understand that, and then to showcase it with us. I thought that was it was a big thing as well. It really was. And fair play to them, fair play to the club, and fair play to the supporters, and obviously for Johnny Whiteley, rest in peace.
Yeah, absolutely.
The game then. The writing for me was on the wall when the squads came out 48 hours prior, to be honest. You know, to have several key players out against an outstanding organisation that is St Helens, and They are head and shoulders the best team in this competition, and it's by a long, long way. The speed, the intensity they play the game at is just phenomenal. And for me, there was no shocks, there was no surprises, and it panned out exactly how we all expected. But I must admit, that game could have got very ugly. It could have been 50-60. And people would be thinking, oh yeah, we've still got hammered. Yeah, but it's a big difference to losing and sticking at it and showing some fight than rather than getting stuck.
There's been a bit of fight, mate. They did. They showed some fight. We were beaten, but we weren't disgraced. Obviously, we had an uphill battle when we named the squad, and then to be down to 12 men and then back up to 13 and then immediately back down to 12 again when Gale went off. Yeah, you're right. It could have gone a lot uglier than it did. I thought the effort was there. Obviously, we were bloody rusty with the ball in hand because when Gale, obviously everything goes through Gale. And without Gale on the field, we didn't look anywhere near. Obviously, Houghton kind of went to seven and was kind of operating more or less on the left hand side, and then Reynolds just on the right hand side, which really didn't work. Obviously, they were trying to plug gaps defensively, which meant that Reynolds couldn't kind of use his normal kind of roving brief on the field like he did at Wakefield, but. There was a lot to take out of that. There was a couple of very, very good performances. Griffin was very good. Over 100 metres he got again. I thought Satai was good when he came on. I thought McIntosh had a good game. I don't think Cam Scott or Connor Wynn let us down. Wynn's yellow card aside, which we can debate. I thought Swift was quiet. I thought Lovadua looked okay off the bench. Vuliki Japani looked good when he came on. But, we were beaten in the forwards. So, Sal tried hard and lost a bit of discipline. Fash was ineffective. Jordan Lane hardly got a look in. Johnston was awful. Danny Houghton just tackled and didn't do much. Shaw looked, I'll be kind, rusty he looked. And I think I can't see him retaining his place next week with Connor back. We might throw him on the bench instead of somebody, but I don't know. I would think that he'll be back in the reserves after that. I don't think he was that good at all.
No.
So, I mean, what can you say? Yeah. I mean, mate, we were smashed up in the forwards. I mean, Walmsley, 210 meters. 210 meters, Walmsley, in conditions like that, which would have been, for a forward his size, would have been like running through glue. And he did 210 meters. Bloody hell.
Yeah. It's incredible, isn't it? It really is. And look at Alex Walmsley. He's probably the leading front rower in Soap League right now. And to be honest, absolutely, probably has been for a number of years now, if we take our specs off and appreciate what he is. And that was a big thing, wasn't it? We talk about St. Helens' speed, their intensity, their flair, their finesse, and just how good they are and how entertaining they are to watch. But they're bloody tough too. And a lot of that stems from Alex Walmsley, but also Agnesius Piazzi, I think that's how you pronounce it.
Piazzi, yeah. Josh Sim as well.
Yeah.
Josh Sim, bloody hell.
Yeah,
what a player.
On the wing, yeah, good. What gets me with Saints, though, is like we mentioned it before when we previewed the game, but they just throw Lewis Dodd in there like it's nothing. They've got a brand new one, Jack Wellsby, and a brand new seven, Lewis Dodd. They're just throwing two academy kids in there. Exactly. Yeah. It's like it's nothing to them. It's incredible, really. And it's a testament to their process and their system and their structure. It's obviously something that Hull want to be.
100%. I mean, I wrote down immediately after the match, which was 2 a.m, and I was about 6 beers in, right? So you'll have to forgive me, but I did write some negatives and positives, right?
Yeah.
And in the positives, I went Griffin, McIntosh, Lovadua, Vuliki Japani, Channel 4. and I actually wrote well beaten but by best side in competition.
Yeah, that's not bad for a bloke half cut.
I know my spelling's a bit off, but you know what I mean. I mean, we were well beaten, but at the end of the day we had a pretty ragtag bunch of players playing. Players playing out of position. You're Griffin in the second row, you've got it wasn't the squad that you'd pick. Fash isn't a starting prop normally. And why they didn't start Satai and Sal together, Hodgson must have thought, well, we need something coming off the bench because it's going to get a bit hairy 20 minutes in, which I can kind of see. But, when you're up against Walmsley, Lees and Roby in the front row, and you've got, they've got class right across the park. I mean, the bench, look at their bench. Lusick, Louis McCarthy, Scarsbrook, Sirinen, and Parsi.
Yeah, that's phenomenal, isn't it?
I mean, that's better than any four of our players.
It's better than most teams starting pack, if we're being honest, isn't it? And this is what gets me.
They are the best team in the country by a country mile.
Absolutely. But they even throw people like Joe Batchelor, who was signed from York, and the nurture him and the craft him. And now he started the season on fire. He looks absolutely brilliant. And their recruitment is outstanding. It complements the side. They've got a nucleus there from a core bred of players that are produced from their academy, and they all fit into that system. They all seem to be on the same wavelength. They back the coach. There don't seem to be any disorganisation or any disagreements. They just get on with it. And yeah, they're outstanding. You can't praise them enough. I mean, James Roby's ridiculous. What is he now? Nearly 15 aware, but he's incredible. He really is. They're a brilliant club. They really are. Brilliant organisation as well. Bit of a dodgy fan base whinging about ticket prices. I mean, come on, you're three-peat Super League champions. I won't care. It's £3 more than it was to stand on a sunken terrace at Wakefield that breaches human rights last week. So what's the problem?
Yeah, exactly.
That's what it is now. It's the COVID world, you know, the post-COVID world. And fortunately, to contradict myself, I do agree 20 is plenty. And it's supposed to be a working-class game after all. It was built, you know, the foundations of the sport are all about working-class all. And all that, and 20 is plenty, but unfortunately the times that we live in now, and that's what it is, and you just got to suck it up, haven't you?
Do you know how much an NRL jersey costs?
It's like $150, isn't it?
$160.
Which is, it's near enough 2-for-1, isn't it, the exchange rate? So yeah, that's ridiculous.
That's about 95 quid.
That's nuts. That's the thing, isn't it? I suppose it's A, supply and demand, and B, it's like, if there's that much, like say, demand for a Penrith top or a South City shop top, then we're going to charge for it. It's just basic economics, isn't it? It is what it is. But St Helens, they just overpowered us. They were just too good for us, and it happens. And I can accept that when you just get beaten by a better team. The writing was on the wall for Hull. It really was.
We were dumb. Let's face it, we were dumb. The Connor Wynn sin bin, you can say that the guy jumped and landed on his own head. Wynn looked absolutely nonplussed when he went off. He was like, he couldn't believe that he'd gone off for that. But I mean, at the end of the day, just after he went off and we packed down for a scrum, and you know, we had a second rower not binding at all, and we get penalised when it's our feed. You know, that's ridiculous. That is ridiculous. That's just poor organisation on Gail's part, because Gail should have made sure that they were binding him properly.
Was that the one was that the one with the still shot of Wamsley, where he's practically stood up as well, and people were kicking off about that? But the point I'll make there is, focus on Hull. Forget them. We've got to get our end right.
100%. Now, you see, what that did, this is my little theory here, right? Because Gale gets right into the ref. We're a man down. We've only got 12 on the pitch. We're allowed not to have a loose man. And the ref, who is an arsehole, by the way, but was right in this thing, said, well, I don't care whether you're a man down. Your second row didn't bind in. You only had four in the scrum. You know, that's fine. It's still a bloody penalty. That was ridiculous, right? That was just poor decision-making, and that was just us being rattled, right? 2 minutes later, there's another scrum, and we pack six in it. While we're down to 12 men, we pack six in the scrum. So we have two props, a hooker, two second row forwards, and a loose man. And then, lo and behold, St. Helens go around us because they've stripped us for numbers. Well, of course they've bloody stripped us for numbers. We should only have five in the sodding scrum. It's just, that was really poor organisation. And I know we've always spoken about, you know, and Hodgson's always been about, you know, we need to talk about how these players react when they're under stress, and how these players react when they're tired and when they're fatigued. And we need, you know, the heat of the moment. That's what, it needs to be muscle memory. Well, that wasn't muscle memory. That was as disappointing as anything I've seen from a whole side in years. That, just that lack of organisation in those 2 minutes. Yeah, we had a little bit of adversity, and Connor Wynn went off. But that 2 minutes there, those two scrums right on our own line, that was poor. That was very, very poor. And then, because Gale's gobbing off at the referee, when he goes through and collects... Roby, wasn't it? When he, or was it Lomax?
Johnny Lomax.
Lomax. When he collected Lomax, straight away the ref's going, well, this gobby bastard, I'm gonna do him. Straight away. I mean, yeah, he went to the screen, and yeah, he went to the video ref, and the video ref said it was intentional, and you could see intent and all the rest of it, which I don't really agree with. But at the end of the day, it's almost indefensible. Mm. He went through, studs up. You don't attack the rugby ball with your foot. You know, you put your body on the line like a man. You know, you're not a soccer player. You throw yourself down. Mm. You know, if it hits you in the face, if it hits you on the hands, it hits you in the stomach, it hits you in the balls, I don't care. You don't go studs up on a halfback.
Yeah.
If that was our halfback and a player went studs up on him, we would be screaming.
That's the thing. We would have been. Our fan base that East Ham would have been absolutely screaming for blood, as is the victim culture within rugby league now. It's someone does something that goes above that line and everyone's, you know, screaming for them to be hugged, drawn and quartered, and that's the way the game is right now. I must admit, though, the red card for me was the right decision. It really was, because it wasn't a big hit that's gone wrong or that roughness and that toughness that we all love about rugby league. This was something off the ball, you know, a kicker. And when you lead with your leg like that and your studs are up and you make contact, and there's no doubt about it, he made contact with him. You can, you have to be a bloody brain surgeon to work that out. You're going to suffer the consequences for it in this day and age, and rightly so, because it was dangerous, it was reckless, perhaps even careless, but it wasn't malicious, and there was definitely no intent there to break his leg, to hurt him or anything like that. And I think to even go down that road is absolutely moronic, so it's disappointing to actually hear Kendall say that. I mean, honestly, I thought Kendall got most of the stuff right, and yeah, most people will probably turn this podcast off now, but that's the way it is. You've got to take your whole blinkers off and accept what's happening. People were screaming all game, get them on side, get them back, whinging. They controlled the game, St. Helens. Anyone who's played the game knows that if you control that ruck, then you control what happens. You control that ruck, you're getting your line set while the players are wrestling with the player you just tackled. You're working off the floor, your line's already set. You jump off him, all play the ball, you're up and at him. And that happened constantly, time and time again. It looks offside, but it's not offside.
I've got to say, none of it was a good look. None of it. You know, Gale losing his cool with the ref at that previous scrum. Gale then rushing through with his studs up. All of it isn't a good look. You know, the crowd chanting the referee's a wanker, that's not a good look either on national TV. To the extent where the guy in the commentary box has to say apologies if you're hearing some language here from the crowd.
It's not a good look at all, no.
It's not a good look. None of it was a good look. And honestly, we record this Monday night my time, Monday morning your time. Luke Gale's going to be up in front of the disciplinary tonight. I'd suggest that it'll be like it was last week, where they'll say, you've got to come back tomorrow and state your case. It's not going to be an open-shut case, this one. They'll make an example out of him because it was on national TV, like they did last week, and they'll make an example of him.
No, and I get that. And it's probably, again, I think whatever he cops, you just have to accept. The thing is, you just can't do things like that in the game. And to make contact like that, I think it's indefensible, really. And as I say, it was dangerous and it was reckless. And people say, if you actually watch all the charge downs from people, you think maybe Richard Swain in 2005 or Jordan Lane last year or any other team, any other player in any other team, and look at how they lead. It will be.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's the thing. That's the difference. But people will lead with elbows and they will lead with knees and they'll charge and throw themselves into it. But I've never seen one like that before. Like you say, where he's leading with a foot like that and it catches a player's leg head on and twats him in the shin. I've never seen that before. It was weird and it was bizarre.
That's turning off in soccer.
Absolutely.
Soccer, you use your feet, but if you go in studs up over the ball, that's sending off.
Absolutely, you're gone. It's not 1970s with one chopper Harris. No, you're gone. Mm. Absolutely, and rightly so. And for me, it's a red card. It's as simple as that. And I've got no complaints with it. We've just got to be smarter. We've got to be more disciplined and we've got to be less dumb. And the discipline thing is absolutely huge for me. It's how many years have we been whinging about it? When you just mentioned the two scrums, you're talking about how amateur that looked and how frustrating it was.
Yeah.
How often do we say things about that with Hull? How often do we say, oh yeah, we're getting this right, we look good here, we look good there? But the basics are left, you know, to be desired. And it reeks of amateur schoolboy stuff, it really does.
The last time I saw anything like that, Dan, was that season where we almost went down, 99. There was a game, we were away at Halifax, and we made a break, I can't remember how it was, I think it was it might have even been Hallas or someone like that, made a break. They got chopped down. He stands up to play the ball. There isn't a whole player within 10 metres to take for acting halfback.
Yeah.
I mean, literally, there was nobody within 10 metres. And that was as bad as I thought it ever got, because that was embarrassing.
And then again, that's happened with Alton a couple of times recently.
Yeah,
last game of Radford, Wire, Magic weekend last year. Did some good things at Magic. True. And then we lose the game because we can't play the ball properly.
Yeah, I know. So, I mean, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what happens now with Gale. My gut tells me, I mean, the way that they usually work with things like this is, you know, he was sent off in the first half, so they almost count the match that he's missed as a match.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you'd think maybe another two on top, maybe three on top. If they want to make a real example of him, it might be four on top, four or five on top even. But I think he's definitely missing the next two.
Yeah.
Definitely.
As I say, mentioned the times that we record this, by the time the podcast goes out, that news will probably be there, or at least if it is sent to a tribunal, that knowledge will be out there, yeah. So if Conor Wynn gets anything, I think I will blow my gasket and go into complete utter meltdown mode.
Although
I think, why lift him in that situation? Why lift Jack Welsby? He was controlled, he wasn't going anywhere, but then I suppose that's how players are taught now, until people wrap him up, you get them legs driving to the ground. But it was unneeded. And this is what I mean about discipline and being smart and not being stupid and realising this is creeping to the game now, because beat no bushes here. Jack Welsby knew exactly what he was doing and he went to ground, and I hate to see that. I mean, we're rugby 100%. League, it's macho. It's a macho sport, for God's sake. We do not want to be seeing shit like that. Players throwing themselves to the ground. People had to go at Johnny Lomax, but I tell you what, he kicked the ball, he sort of looked at where he's kicking, and then the pain went. You know, sometimes that happens, doesn't it? A couple of seconds after it happens, and the pain kicks and you think, shit, that really hurt. Goes to ground, he's got a gash on his leg, so he ain't milking it. Come on, he's got a huge cut on his bloody shin where he stood, where Luke Gales has stood to bloody hit him. So I had no problem with that, but I did have a problem with Welsby going down. I thought that was a poor look, and knew exactly what he was doing. He knew he was being lifted and sort of threw his head to the floor, which you're thinking has got Alex McKinnon written all over it. Why would you do that?
It really has. That's exactly what McKinnon did.
Yeah, but why would you do that, knowing the life-threatening injuries and, dare I say, the post-life that he can have, and obviously that Alex has got right now. Why would you even put yourself in that position and throw yourself to the ground knowing that something like that could happen? Yeah, just to get a penalty when you're already winning the game and you're going to win it comfortably anyway. It's baffling. It really is.
And then, you know, when you look at, you know, Andrea Savelio getting 2 weeks last week for sliding in with the knees when Johnston scored, he connected, but I wouldn't have thought that was a 2 week ban. So, you know, I don't know. I mean, you know, that, the referee didn't do anything at the time. He wasn't put on report or anything, was he? It was just, you know, it was just a post-match thing.
Well, same with Riesling, getting three for Wakey.
Same with Riesling, yeah. Exactly, yeah. So I honestly think Conor Wynn's in a bit of trouble. I think he might get a match.
Yeah.
And he shouldn't, but I think just on recent form, he might.
The precedent that they've set this year, that was tough reading the disciplinary news that came out last week, and it'll probably be the same again this week. And I suppose, like I say though, if we're going down Hull's ill-discipline route and saying that we need to improve, well, that's across the board. Players need to improve. They know what the referees are targeting right now. They know what's going to happen, so just cut it out. You know, be smarter, be more disciplined. It's as simple as that. I must admit, I get absolutely sick of rugby league, where all we do is a collective, you know, group of supporters. All we do is whinge about referees, whinge about decisions, whinge about this, whinge about that. And we're all guilty of it.
I've seen Richard Silverwood come out this week and say, this isn't the game that I remember and all the rest of it. Well, I'm sorry, Silverwood, but, you know, he's been, what, suspended, resigned, suspended three times by the RFL.
Yeah, exactly.
Sacked, he's nobody to start preaching about what the game should be and what the game shouldn't be.
But then the game's moved on since then. We have got to focus on safety. And don't get me wrong, we have gone too far with it. We said this last week with some of the eye tackles, I mean, and some of the red cards that we didn't think were red cards last week. But there is an element of safety out there. We do not want players suffering, you know, having problems later in life because of what happens on a rugby league field now. And we've got a duty of care there, but there's a balance, isn't there? And there's a line. And
yeah, there is.
That's why
it's a contact sport.
Exactly.
It's a contact sport. There is no set of rules that are perfect for a sport like ours.
No.
There's only best case scenario.
Yeah, that is
and there'll
true.
Always be something weird that comes up, or there'll always be an awkward tackle, or there'll always be someone, you know, instinctively throwing an arm out which looks worse than it is. It'll always happen. It's not going to change. It's a contact sport.
Well, that, I suppose that was what's so weird about the Gale thing, because there's no example of that before. There's no, like, precedent, if you like, of punishment or anything like that. Because it was, like you say, it was unique. It was dangerous, reckless, but come on, it was accidental. And I mean, I saw that Matt Sadler from the League Express saying it's intentional, he knows exactly what he's doing. What is he thinking? Luke Gale's gone there with the intention of ending Johnny Lomax's career. Oh, come on, get a grip.
Bull. Yeah, bull. Absolute bull. Yeah. That's dangerous. And that's irresponsible journalism. Let's look forward then. So with Salford coming up, what's the backline look like for Salford? I mean, is it going to be Jake Connor straight back in at fullback, or do you put him in at six or seven, or what do you do?
I would go with your first option. I think Jake has to be a like-for-like replacement. You've got to keep Jake at one, and you put Ben McNamara in. You know, obviously it's all hypothetical because. But we pretty much accepted that Gale will cop a ban.
I think Gale's gone.
Gale's gone. We don't, obviously, how long? Yeah, we'll talk about that next week. But yeah, I think we ain't going to see him line up on Saturday. I'd probably go with Ben at six and Jake at one and see how that works out. But you can't. Jamie Shaw, bloody hell! That was a tough day. And yes, we spoke about a little bit about this earlier and before we started recording about the fact that. It's tough for Jamie because, he's hardly played any rugby, and obviously he's had that foot injury, which is a bit of a pain in the ass when you just come back from an ACL. But he was well off the pace. He made some horrendous mistakes, and he looked defeated, to be honest, by the end of the game. The Jack Wellsby try, where he tried to con the referee, he did con the referee because it went up as a no try, and there was not wrong with it. Maybe he's got a career in politics because he managed to deceive a referee. So, yeah, go get yourself at Whitehall now.
To me, he looked... He looked like he's lost a yard of pace. And look, you know, ACL injury is a horrible one to come back from. Then to have a foot injury that's compounded that on top. And not to have played any football for, 8 months, 9 months, 10 months?
Well, he played at Wakey away last year in the final game. I think, what did he make? Four appearances last year? So, what? This is
that's right.
Fifth game in 2 years.
He came off the bench and played as a good in the
year. Yeah.
Maybe on the bench. You know, I mean, Vuliki Japani did a job when he came on for us. As a kind of utility back, maybe that could be Scholl's space on the back. Yeah,
I'd be getting rid.
Because he can.
I really would. I'd be getting rid now. If Toulouse want him, let him go. And that's harsh, but I don't care. It's as I say, club comes first. Jamie Shaw will forever be cherished by Hull supporters for the 100 tries that he scored, the winner he got at Wembley, his bravery, his defensive work. You know, all the high ball stuff. All that speed, all those fantastic tries we've seen, blah, 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 blah. He'll always be remembered and we'll always be grateful for that. But you've got to move on. You move with the times. He's not the answer now for Hull FC's fullback. He's gone. He's finished as far as I'm concerned. Get rid today. Use that cap space better. That's what we've got to do.
Yeah. I suppose the thing that we can say about Scholl now, right? 2 years ago, if this had come up and he'd been injured and coming back and everything, you'd give him the time to come back because 2 years ago, he was our fullback. He was the club's fullback. And there wouldn't have been, who would you have put in there instead? Maybe Griffin, who's done a little bit of fullback in his career, but Griffin's grown out of that now. He's too big. He's a centre-stroke-second-row forward now. The difference now is that you've got Jake Connor, who was incredible last year at fullback. You've got Swift that can play fullback. You've got Connor Wynn that can play fullback. And you've got Darnell McIntosh that can play fullback. So, Scholl... Horrible thing to say. He's now kind of surplus to requirements, and he'd be on decent money.
Exactly.
You know, I think you're right. You know, if the difference is that when we've been trying to get rid of players, you know, over you know like Jordan Johnston or you know whoever, there's been no one coming and said yes, please, we'll have him. Mm. If someone does come in for Scholl and it is Toulouse, well then you do you release him.
Well, their coach announced last night that Mark Curellere, is that how you pronounce it? Yeah, he'll never play for the Toulouse again. So they will be actively looking for it. There's rumours that they're interested. We did three or four podcasts last year basically saying that the club are too sentimental. They've been far too lenient in contracts contracts handed out. The mentality's been all wrong. They took the eye off the prize, everything else, and we've had a fall from grace because of all that, because of that sentimentality and because of that mismanagement. We've now got a situation now where we've got to be ruthless. We've got to be absolutely ruthless because the club comes first. And there's other options there. I'm sorry, but Shawley's not the answer now. He really isn't. I'm used to a fullback that nails that pass now. And first few minutes of the game, Hull giving a decent account of themselves. You know, St. Helens aren't really beginning to dominate yet. Got a 3-on-1 overlap, and he throws the ball into Rossi.
Yeah, I think I sent you a, I think I, the message I sent you at the time was, ladies and gentlemen, the difference between Jake Connor and Jamie
Exactly, exactly.
I did send you a text.
Exactly. And Pete, it's his first game back this season, yes. I'm not judging it on that. I'm judging it on what I've seen and how I see Hull FC's situation right now and how we need to better use the cap. And this is another thing, right? People talk about Hull FC's resources and trying to make excuses for us, really. Start being like club apologists, if you like. But we spend a hell of a lot of money. We spend 2.5 million on the salary cap with 6,500 members, and we're still doing that. We're still doing that. Just like Wigan are, the same situation. They're probably spending a similar amount of money to us. They've got a similar amount of members because of obviously what's happened with COVID. Well, I must admit, both clubs boasted five-figure crowds this weekend, so obviously they're doing something right. But pretty much the same, right? We spent that money. We've got to spend that money better. And again, it's reiterating points that we've made time and time again, but it's still valid to the present day because we've still got problems. We've got players who aren't offering value or who aren't really necessarily needed with better options, but we're holding on to them. Jamie Shaw is probably the best example of that. He is not considered a first-choice player now. He even came out in pre-season and said, I want to fight for the wing spot because Brett Hodgson said, I am second fiddle to Jake Connor and I don't want to be second fiddle. I want to go out for a wing spot. Well, unfortunately, mate, you're second fiddle there because we've got Adam Swift and Daniel McIntosh. So,
yeah, exactly. And Zuliki Japani and Wynn can play there.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And obviously, there's a loyalty to a player, don't get me wrong, and there's obviously a gratitude to a player and all that. But you cannot say it enough times that the club comes first, and if an offer comes in for him now, just like it did with Sneed last year, you've got to go, okay, yeah, there you go, assess your options, off you pop. Thank you for your service.
It'd be on decent money if we can recoup some of that cap. You know, you go out and buy a hairy ass prop from the championship just for the numbers.
Oh, that's what we need. We need size, don't we? But
you just go out and get someone big,
exactly,
just for the numbers.
Yeah, meet Ian. I mean, I used the term in website when I talk about player reviews and Chris Satay, and you're right, it was absolutely immense for Owen. Rugby league right now is so obsessed with supersonics, but don't rule out the big fella, because the big fella is so important. If you don't win that middle, your halfbacks aren't going to platform. Unless you're Jonathan Fairston that can pull some out of your ass, then you're not going to win many games, are you?
Take Walmsley out of that first half performance by Saints, we'd have been a hell of a lot closer, even with a man sent off.
Yeah, agreed. Agreed. And you can't emphasise enough how good Walmsley and how good Parsi and how good Matty Lees and even Louis McCarthy Scarsbrook at 36 and whatever he is now.
Yeah.
They're outstanding. All of them. They really are. And they contribute massively to the St. Helens. And we haven't got
one. One thing 100%. And if we can, like I say, we can free up some cap space with Shaw going. If we, you know, look at what you said yourself, what Saints have done with Batchelor. You know, identify him at York, bringing him on, and you know, do that. You know, you'd rather go out and you know, and I'm gonna get blasted for saying this, but on current form, would you rather have got rid of Shaw in close season and offered Massimo Matongo a smaller deal? Do you know what I mean? Just because he's there and I know he's not the answer, and I know he wasn't good enough, and I know that, but we are light in the forwards and just a body.
I get where you're coming from there, I really do. And there's other examples in the squad, right? And you sort of look at where Hull are at right now and what value they're getting from players. You look at someone like Chris Satay. To be honest, you look at someone like Brad Fash, who's probably not on a fraction of the money of Chris Satay. Look at the value you get from Brad Fash, right? Hardly ever misses a game, and he'll give every single ounce of energy and effort he has onto that pitch every single week. And I appreciate that, I really do. I understand his limitations, but I appreciate that graft. Then you look at Scott Taylor. What the hell's going on there? Why haven't they sorted that out? I think it's an absolute disgrace. This happened, what, a year ago, next month? Was it March, April, whenever it was when he did the foot injury at Wigan? Why isn't that sorted out? Why are we still in here? Why are we hearing now reoccurrences of that injury? Why wasn't it sorted out? Why wasn't it operated on? Why haven't they got him right? Yeah. Why haven't the club got it right? But why hasn't he, as a player, got it right? And this is where I look at Hull, right? Scott Taylor will be quite happy to dine off those two Challenge Cup wins, and any argument, and from his little minions that, you know, will support him through thick and thin, they'll all be saying, "Oh yeah, he won two Challenge Cups. I don't give a crap. It was 6 and 7 years, 6 years ago, 5 and
what
6 years ago."
Lately?
Exactly. It's about the right here, right now. And you look at value and mismanagement and stupid contracts we've been dishing out. There's another example right there. What are we getting from him? What value are we getting from that 5-year contract? Same with Josh Bowden. I was a fan of Bowden in the two cup winning years, I really was, but since then, what's he done? Nothing. He's obviously unfortunate to get the ACL injury, come back, can't stay fit, can't stay in form. Obviously, it goes, the two go hand in hand when you can't get any continuity. How are you supposed to get any form? I understand that. But again, we can't just hold on to what he did 5 and 6 years ago. It's about now and what he's offering now.
There's your difference in it. Because, you know, when we were looking at cancelling contracts and moving people on at the end of last year, you know, there's only a certain amount of players that you can go, you go, you go, you go. Because, you know, there's a finite amount of cash to pay these players out, right? The major problems we had were at the very top end of the salary cap, which was Sneed and Fenua.
Hmm.
We paid Fenua off and allowed him to go to Cass, and Salford came in for Sneed and said, we'll take him off your hands because we're going to sign him next year anyway because you're not going to offer him a contract. We'll take him off your hands this year if you want. We snapped their hand off. That was two really good pieces of business. The problem is you can't pay Johnston off. You know, you can't pay Taylor off. You can't pay, because it cost us too much money.
Hmm.
And also, we're light in the forwards, and there's nothing else coming through. We've gone some way towards mitigating that by signing Lovadua, who's light years better than Johnston, and signing Kane Evans, who when he finally gets on the pitch, I reckon it's going to be a revelation. Although, I will say, if we've got a bloody discipline problem now, we're going to have to put bloody Kane Evans on a sodding short leash, because if he gets the red mist comes down with Kane Evans, it's all on for young and old, mate. You know, I love the bloke because he puts himself about and he's a hairy ass prop and he's going to be, the opposition halfback's going to be looking over the shoulder wondering where he is because they don't want to get hit by him. But he's got to make sure he does it legally, because if we get in the reputation of being a side that gets a couple of players sent off every week, well, then the last thing you need is Kane Evans marauding down the pitch.
Well, that's the thing, mate. We're two games in and we've had two reds and one yellow. And we all know that reputation plays a part in these things. And whoever referees all against Salford, and then Castleford, and then Leeds, and then, you know, so on and so forth. But look at that.
I mean, how many times has Connor been spoken to by a ref because his reputation's gone before him? How many times was Farima yellow carded and red carded? Because, you know, I saw him get sent off twice, one for a head high, or twice for head high tackles. You know, because he's got that lazy defending style when he played for us. And, you know, didn't he get sin-binned again playing for Cass last week as well?
Yeah, he did, yeah.
You know, he's got that reputation, so referees know, oh, it's him again, no problem. You know, which is, I think a lot of that was a problem that we've had with Connor in the past, when, you know, referees just took one look and just gone, you know, he's a gobby sod, and you know, he can go warm the bench for 10 minutes.
No, that's what happens, though. You build up a reputation. Then it comes to a situation where you're getting spoken to by the ref. He takes one look at you and think, yeah, bugger you, off you pop. You know, and that's what happens. And it does worry me a little bit.
We've got three of them now.
Yeah,
we've got three of them.
Yeah.
We've got Reynolds, Connor, and Gale.
Yeah, and then you could add, like you say, Evans into there. You know, we've got a couple of others who will probably. I mean, Connor Wynn's got a short fuse as well.
He really has, hasn't he? Yeah,
a couple of others have as well. And discipline is a huge thing. It is a massive problem at LFC, and we can sweep it under the carpet and blame refs all we like, but that will never solve the problem. We've got to accept that it is a huge problem, and it is one that needs urgent attention right now. Because if it's going to hold us back, it has held us back for a while now, and it will continue to do so. And so we can't just blame a ref. You can't just go, oh, the referee was terrible, oh, the referee did this. It's embarrassing, it really is. You just got beaten 38-6. It's not the referee's fault. It's our fault, because we're not disciplined enough. We're not professional enough.
If we'd have lost the game and they'd have scored three tries when Connor Wynn was off the field, well, then I'd have looked at it and gone, referees crueled us. Right? But they didn't. Yet we were down when Connor Wynn was off the field, and that didn't help. But you've got your halfback charging through and trying to charge down a ball with his studs up. Any referee in the world of rugby league's got to send him off, especially because he made contact.
Yeah. The only thing that warmed me up on that.
If he hadn't made contact.
So, yeah, you're absolutely right. Even if he didn't make contact, you're thinking, oh shit, why have you done that? But the fact they made contact made the decision conclusive. You got to go. But it's a point you always make, actually. And Unfortunately, until Super League becomes a level playing field with a video referee every week, then you're going to get these situations, because that's a 20-meter restart if that game's not televised. That's the frustration. It's like a petty point to make, really, because the decision was the right decision, and we can't argue with it. But the fact is, if it weren't on TV, we won't know about it until the disciplinary news came out. That's the frustration.
No, you're 100% right. Now, I'll tell you what, right? While we're talking about dodgy discipline, right? Did you see what happened in the NRL trials over the weekend? So, Eels were playing St George, right? Hayes Dunster, really good young player for Parramatta. He's going to be out for the season. He's done both his knees. He's done his ACL and his MCL. Right, because the player that tackled him hip dropped onto his knee, and his knee literally just bent the wrong way. It was horrendous. He's out now for probably 7-8 matches. That's going to go to a tribunal. He's been already said it's going to be at least 6. It's possibly going to be more. And here's Dunster's out for the season. Right. The confusing thing is that this is Tyrell Fuimono. Is the guy that's going to be out for 6-8 matches banned. His sister goes out with Hayes Dunster and has been living with him for 6 years.
Mm.
So he's basically crippled his prospective brother-in-law. and, you know, it's going to be a horrible bloody thing. You know, he's going to be out for the season, Hayes Dunster, and it could have finished his career. I mean, we're not talking about someone running through with studs up and catching someone a glancing blow on the leg. As bad as that is, and I'm not thinking, this was a hip drop tackle that was cynical and meant to hurt.
Mm.
And he's done it on a bloke who's going out with his sister.
Yeah,
someone's got some issues there.
Yeah, you see, the next family dinner will be interesting.
Will it? What? Can you imagine the wedding?
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, that's not going to be pretty, that.
No, especially on the trial game as well.
Yeah.
It's a bit
more. You know, that's the difference as well. Every trial game over has been shown live on Fox.
Yeah, I did notice that.
Every single one.
Yeah, they're all available over here too on our Watch NRL app. Mm. Just shows the difference, doesn't it? But I suppose that's money in it. Yeah. That's resources. That's financial investment, that's supply and demand, that's also the fact that rugby league, in two states, certainly is
the number one sport.
Yeah, exactly, the number one sport.
Number
yeah. But that I suppose when we say, oh yeah, every Super League game should have a video referee, that's where it comes down to. It comes down to resources, lack of money, and it also comes down to the fact that they cannot put out sufficient angles to showcase all these incidents when you haven't got the resources to do it. So,
yeah. I mean, look, the Channel 4 deal is a step in the right direction.
Oh, absolutely.
And if they carry on the way that they've started, because that game on the weekend was brilliantly presented, they carry on the way that they've gone and they make us more of a mainstream sport, then, you know, maybe we're going to get another TV deal or Channel 4 will go, well, we'll have 2 matches or we'll have 20 matches a season or whatever. And then you're going to get more and more and more games with a video ref.
Yeah.
You know, and then that can only be a good thing. I just think it's baby steps at the moment.
No, I agree.
This week then, right? Last week with Super League. So with the matches that were played, you had... Let's have a look. Warrington and Cass, that was on Sky on Thursday.
Yep.
Wigan Leeds, that was Sky Friday.
Yep.
Us Saints, that was Channel 4 Saturday.
Yep.
Huddersfield Rovers, not on TV at all.
No.
Catalans Trinity, that would have been on French TV.
Yep, which is shown obviously on Sky, 5 o'clock.
Which is shown on Sky as well, so that would have had... That would have had a video ref.
Yeah.
And then Salford Toulouse. Was that on any channel?
Nope. That's Sunday afternoon.
Right. So only 2 games not with video refs then. That's a step in the right direction.
It is. Absolutely. The fact that when Catalans are at home or a French team are at home, you're going to have them televised obviously when it is a Channel 4 weekend, you're looking at four games out of six. It is a step in the right direction, absolutely. But
yeah,
until we get 100% of the games with or without a video ref, then it's an uneven playing field, especially for a club that's, let's say, is on TV, I don't know, 15, 16 of the 27 rounds versus an unpopular team that's only on five or six times. And that's the thing. I mean, don't get wrong, it's not going to affect the table so much so that a team is wrongly done by it, because St Helens will be top because they're the best team. It's as simple as that. I mean, the thing is with champion sides, people love to hate them, don't they? Love to dislike them. Because it's jealousy. That's all it is. It's jealousy. It happens all the time. Yeah. Even in soccer. Soccer? What? Blimey. Listening to you so much.
That's me talking.
Everyone hated Leeds. Everyone hated Liverpool. Everyone hated Man United. Everyone hates Chelsea. Everyone hates Man City. Why? Because they win things. Yeah. It's jealousy. Simple as that. Same in rugby. 100%. It's why everyone hates Wigan. Why everyone hates Leeds. Why everyone hates Saints. Because they win things. And that's what it is. I must admit, to round off the game then on Saturday, just beaten by a better side, and it happens, and they're an outstanding organisation. We need to be better, we need to improve, we all know that, but sometimes you just have to say fair play to your opposition.
Yeah, exactly. What else can you say? They were a much better team, and they handled the adversity of the weather better than us.
Yeah.
And then, you know, they capitalised on the fact that they were playing against 12 men, because sometimes that doesn't happen. You know, sometimes teams can't get around 12 men. 12 men rise, and you know, we didn't. Our heads didn't go down. Our heads did not go down. But looking at it, you know, they just dealt with it better than we did.
Yeah, exactly. And I get it. Sometimes when you go down to 12, it gets like a siege mentality. I mean, we've beaten sides with 12 men before. We beat Cast, didn't we? 2017 when Liam Watts got sent off, and that was about 20 minutes in, so we managed to see that game out. It's a good job that we actually built a comfortable lead before the red card, but you still have to see it out, don't you? So, there was some fight, there was some, you know, something to go on, some positives, but it's also a realisation to where Hull FC are at right now, and none of us are happy about it, but hopefully we've made the first steps in the right direction to rectifying them with what we saw last winter, and that's got to continue now, and we've got to be absolutely ruthless. And that's why I singled out the Jamie Shaw point there, because that is an area right now where we can better manage the squad and better use of our resources, and we've got to do that. But yes, the Super League card then, there was no shocks really. Interestingly, half the people in the Upper Korean Tipping League got full houses. I think you was one of them. I was one of them. So
yeah,
can't wait for the Dan's rigging the league comments. Gonna put the table up later, and Dan and Rich are near the top. But I've got my Our League to prove it. I've got your messages to prove yours. So we're all good.
Nice. That's good. Yeah. Well, I mean, look, interesting. I mean, Wakefield really ran Catalans close. Catalans have had a dodgy start to the season, haven't they?
Yeah, they've got some good tries. They let Wakefield back in. So yeah, you're absolutely right. They're not looking the formidable side, were they?
Good.
Yep.
Yeah, Salford look all right. I mean, they're only playing to lose, but they look all right.
Yeah,
Rovers look abject without Coote.
not like getting caught up in your own hype, is there?
That's exactly what we said last week, isn't it? You know, what would you rather be, hyped and none from two, or flying under the radar and one from two? I'd rather be us than them.
Or just accept where you are and
yeah, exactly.
You know, that's what we've done.
I had a quick look across at their social media. Bloody hell, knives are out. We've gone backwards. This is disgusting.
Well, they've done what they've always done. They have a year, every decade, they have one year where they have something other than bottom four shite.
They can sign an international class fullback in Coote, but they've still got Jordan Abdul at halfback.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly.
You know, that's the problem. That's the problem. You got a player pulling strings that I'm sorry, he's a loose forward. He's not a halfback or a six. You know, he's not bright enough to lead the team around the pitch. He's not.
No, he's not. I tell you what, one player who I absolutely had the pleasure of watching, and it was a pleasure because I'm thinking, wow, was Jaffield at Wigan. He's a speed merchant, isn't he? Yeah. Bloody hell, that boy is quick. Shot over cannon for the third try, thinking, Jesus. And just as impressive as the hat-trick was the cover tackle on that young Leeds player, that Tyndall, because that was outstanding.
Yes. Yeah, no, he's good, isn't he? And I'll tell you, the other little bit of news as well is that a lot of cast support was very upset with Radford as well.
That was a meltdown and a half, that, wasn't it? Crikey.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you're always been known as classy Cass. Well, I think that's coming to a bit of a halt now, isn't it? You know, I mean, there's not a lot of class there.
Wasn't like a painful throwback to watching all.
That's exactly right. And people were saying, you know, we've got these lumbering wingers, centres that don't seem to be able to break a tackle. I'm like, well, yeah, that's what your head coach brought with him.
Mm.
That's what he said he wanted.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, I think the Radford rode the wave when it was a good wave, but then unfortunately, as the wave started to die, he clung on to it and clung on to it and clung on to it, and he couldn't change with the times.
No, I agree. I agree with that. But it was also hung out to dry by some players who are still holding us back even now. Yeah. So. But yeah, I mean, the fact that he's gone to what he knows with the two wingers who were... Sorry, but watching through him, that interception, he ran 30 metres, got tackled, and then this guy went to a shot of him, and he had his hands on his hips and he was blowing out his arse and thinking, Jesus, what?
Yeah, on 30 metre runners are back.
Yeah, and he's blowing out his arse, turned like a slug, and I'm thinking, yeah, thank you, Castleford, for getting him off our books. Cheers, lads. Yeah, we've...
I will say as well, though, he looks fitter than he did for us last year. He looks thinner.
Yeah.
He does.
Yeah, he does. Yeah. Still, let's say, not the
but
answer.
Still not right.
No.
Yeah.
No.
But still not right.
No.
Yeah.
No. Just to read out the results then, Warrington 34, Cast 10, Wigan 34, Leeds 12, Hull 6, St Allen's 38, Huddersfield 26, Rovers 12, lol. Catalans 24, Wakefield 22, Salford 38, Toulouse 12. So, yeah, there's, I'd say, not many surprises there. A couple of laughs as well. Yeah, Hull got beat, but yeah, Leeds are none from two, Rovers are none from two. As a Hull fan, you got to laugh at that, haven't you?
Yeah, you do. And you know, Radford against Smith in a 4-point relegation decider. this coming week.
Just to balance that, a lot of people said that Owen Wakefield was a big 4-point relegation battle as well. So.
Yes, true. But we won that one.
So yeah, exactly. We won ours, didn't we? I don't think things are that bad, crikey. But yeah, the top six is a tall order. I think we really are going to have to have our wits about us to get in that six. But who knows? We're two rounds in. Anything can happen. I want to stay optimistic. Also realistic as well. I think that's the important thing. But and let's jump straight into that then. We've got Salford at home in round three. Another home game, as I say. Home form is a huge thing that pretty much every fan has singled out this year, and rightly so, because it's got to be better. We've got to win games, first and foremost, but we've got to win them well.
Yeah, and the script is written for Shaw to come back and bite us in the arse, isn't
it? Oh, absolutely.
Sneed, sorry, not Shaw.
Oh, well, if Shaw plays.
The script is written.
Yeah, Shaw plays, yeah. And obviously with Sneed too, yeah, I agree.
The script is written for Mark Sneed to come back and kick us to death. Especially when his replacement's likely to be banned. Do you know, it worries me a little bit, does that? You couldn't make it up. That does worry me a little bit, does that one? But at the end of the day, Salford's a team we should be beating. They shouldn't hold any major problems for us. We've got a good enough squad to cover Salford. And, you know, when Ben McNamara's had his chance, he's generally grabbed it with both hands. You know, with fingers crossed, with Reynolds next to him and with Connor at fullback as an extra pivot and as an extra creative player, we should have enough to cover him, I think.
Yeah.
I will say one thing. That set of six that we put together against Saints, where Gale kicked to the wing and McIntosh regathered it, made an extra 10 metres, and then he got the ball on the next play of the ball and tried to kick it to the other wing for Swift. Jeez, that was impressive. I mean, there were low percentage plays, you know.
But it was brave, wasn't it? It was taking a chance.
It was brave, and we recognised that we weren't going to go over the top of Saints. We weren't going to go through them because they're too good. It was just something different and off the cuff and everything. And there's that real feeling of what if for me, that, you know, what if Gale hadn't have done that? Would we have run him closer, you know? We'd probably still got beat, but
yeah,
we'd have given a bloody good account of ourselves.
I think that's an absolute sense. It wouldn't have been a 32-point defeat. It probably would have been, I don't know, let's say a 14-20-point defeat on maybe a 10-14 point difference.
You know, just going back to the game as well, you know, I mean, at one stage there we had three hookers on the pitch, you know, and you've got the slowest one of them at acting halfback, because you've got Houghton playing seven, and you've got Lovadua coming on at 13, and you've got Johnston at the base of the ruck, and he's the slowest one of them.
I cannot wait to
put
see
him at 13 and put Lovadua at nine. It's just, it just seems to me like there was no. I don't know whether Hodgson has said to him, that's the way I want you to play, or whether that's the way that they've kind of defaulted when they all got on the pitch and you know, Hodgson's not in their ear. I don't know. But whatever it was, it wasn't good.
No, it wasn't. It won't. Yeah, we've got to be, let's say, a bit more smarter across the board on that front. And you're not helped when you get disrupted like that, when you obviously you lose your chief organiser, your distributor in Gale, but you've got to adapt, don't you? You've got to, you know, be better, you know, in that disruption, in that adversity, and you've got to show up more than that. But again, that probably plays into the opposition and obviously who they were and how good they are and how intense they are and how they put us under pressure and how they didn't give us any room to breathe. You know, they absolutely smothered us in all aspects of the game. And
it's a professional championship winning brilliant team.
Yeah. Absolutely. They really are. They're outstanding.
And we're not.
No. Yeah, exactly. You know? It's as simple as that in the end of the day, isn't it? Yeah. They're outstanding. Yeah. We're not. But we are a work in progress. We know that. We've got a coach who knows what he wants. He knows what the type of player he wants. He knows who he wants to get rid of. Mm. And there is a plan. It might not be there to see to some people who just want to string him up and get rid now and go back to square one. But there is a plan there. Just listen back to the previous podcast that we've had this season, and you might get some idea of what that plan is. But we can see it. We can see it with the wingers. We can see it with Gale. We can see it with Satai. We can see it with how he wants us to play. We can see it with bravery in attack, with a better structure, a better shape, which I think we will get. But the problem's going to be this year is if we're changing our squad every bloody week because of suspensions, because of injuries. We're not going to get any continuity, any nurturing of combinations, of understandings. And it's a squad that can handle that against the Wakefield, against the Toulouse, but it's not one that can handle it against a St. Helens or a Wigan or a Warrington. And that's
the difference.
That's the problem, That is the problem. Just been joined by our infamous cockapoo puppy, Benji, who's... If any background noise on the podcast, I do apologise. I think he's had two rants already, backing at the postman and backing at everything else. So I do apologise for that. But I suppose he makes
it's all
it
right. I've got you might hear in the background. I've got because it's still the end of summer here. You know, while you were all watching the hole in, with 15 layers on in the middle of a blizzard, I was sat there in shorts. You know, and still 25 degrees at midnight when I started watching it, which is a bit different.
Yeah.
So the background noise you can hear at my place is the crickets outside. So this we've got crickets and stuff. So
worlds away, aren't we? We're in the middle of a storm here. Let's see, we've got snow, sleet, rain, freezing temperatures. Yeah, all good. Bring it on again on Saturday, though. Let's hope. I tell you what, though, after having two games where it's just been rain, cold, snow, sleet, and everything else, it would be nice to actually have a dry day on Saturday. And if we do get that, maybe we'll see a slicker Hull FC, because we'll still have Reynolds out there. We'll still have Jake Connor out there. There's still some players that can, you know, cause some problems.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, and McIntosh. McIntosh on a dry track, because he's rapid.
He looks exciting, doesn't he?
Yeah. And he had plenty of, I mean, this is a horrible thing to say because he had lots and lots and lots of practice, but I really liked his kickoff variation as well. I thought he caused a lot of trouble with his kickoffs. They were high, they were swirling.
Yeah.
A bit like Pat Richards when Pat Richards played for Wigan. They were difficult to take. You know, he didn't give them an easy run on kickoffs, which is really good.
No, true.
And I just thought, you know, he's a, you know, normally when you sign a player from a, inverted commas, lesser side like Huddersfield, they can tend to be a little bit of a project, as Jake Connor was when he first came over. He was a bit of a project, but I like McIntosh. I think he looks the deal.
Absolutely, something to go on there, definitely. And he's had a good start to life at LFC. Leave that there for another edition of the podcast before this dog begins to drive me insane. But thanks for your time, mate. And come on, you all
definitely.